Healthcare in America is in deep crisis. Join me, Corinne Fregoni, in a conversation with Pat Snyder, a nurse who's been advocating for a single-payer health plan for the past 14 years. In California, we're at a very dramatic fork in the road. We've never been closer to achieving universal health coverage for all Californians. Stay tuned and find out the latest developments, coming up next on Through the Eyes of Women. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Pat Snyder. Pat holds a doctorate in nursing from George Mason University in Virginia and has served as a nurse administrator at hospitals in Virginia, Maryland, and New York. Now retired, but probably even more active and committed to seeking a solution to our healthcare crisis, she serves as a legislative consultant in the healthcare program of the League of Women Voters of California and has devoted her time and energy to educating and advocating for a single-payer health plan for California. Today, we're going to discuss why our healthcare system is broken, what the solution is for low-cost, efficient healthcare, and what you can do to fix it. We're going to find out all the facts about single-payer healthcare, all in half an hour. A tall order, but I know Pat can do it. Thanks for joining us, Pat, on Through the Eyes of Women.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me, Corinne. It'll be a pleasure.
We're going to focus on single-payer health care, especially with what's happening in California with Senate Bill 562, also known as the Healthy California Act. It's an exciting time with lots of momentum, but I find that even people who support the concept of single-payer have a lot of questions. Let's start by clarifying what is single-payer.
You're right, Corinne. A lot of people are confused about what single-payer is. It's always a good place to start. We need to understand that it is a way of financing healthcare, not a way of providing it. So the provider system doesn't change, but all the services that everyone universally receives are paid for through a fund within, in this case, it'll be the state government. So everyone, universal care, same benefits, very comprehensive, and instead of paying premiums, people pay taxes in some way or other that fund the system. So Medicare is another example of a single-payer system.
That's limited by age.
That's limited by age. So it's not the whole population. It's just all of the over 65 people in the U.S. are eligible for Medicare and some disabled people. So, yes, it's just part of us.
Does it include undocumented workers?
No. Undocumented people are really at a disadvantage here, and that's one of the things we need to change because that has a big impact on our public health, and that affects all of us. And so we're better off if everyone is covered, and that's one of the big benefits of having a single-payer system. Everyone receives the care they need, and that makes for a healthier population.
Who's covered under single-payer?
Under the single-payer plan that we're proposing for California, everyone who resides here would be covered. The bill says that a resident is someone whose primary abode is California, so that definitely includes all of the undocumented. And that's an advantage for all of us because it creates a healthier population. It's good for public health, and that is a benefit to everybody.
So it doesn't matter if you have chronic conditions, what your age is, what your sex is, whether you're documented or undocumented, everyone is covered. Is that correct?
That's correct. And no life changes can change your access to that coverage. Right now, we have a big problem. Someone gets divorced and loses their husband's benefits, or someone loses a job and loses their coverage, or someone gets sick, can't work, loses their coverage. But none of that kind of thing will happen under the single-payer plan. Everyone will be covered from birth to death.
What are the benefits that someone can get?
The benefits are very, very comprehensive. As a matter of fact, it's no exaggeration to say that essentially everyone will have better benefits than they have now. some people feel like they have good insurance, but that's a very relative term, and few will have anything as comprehensive as what we're proposing now. And that's because the bill requires that all necessary medical care be provided to people, so that requires very comprehensive benefits. For example, a Medicare patient now does not have vision and dental coverage and has limited drug coverage in many cases. Those kinds of things will be eliminated. Coverage for vision and dental will be available to Medicare. And everyone is going to be in a much better place than they are right now.
From my understanding, it will cover mental health, rehab, addiction services, dental, as you said, vision and hearing, hospital, drugs, visits to the doctor, and even some complementary medicine. Is that so?
That's so. All of that's true. And one thing I'd like to say in regard to that, very, very important, the coverage for mental health, for addictions, et cetera. The fact that we do not care well for people with these kinds of problems in our society creates so many social problems that are very, very difficult for us to deal with, like the homeless population includes many mentally ill people who do not have the resources to pull themselves together. If we treated their illness, much of that problem could be mitigated and people could live decent, dignified lives. So that's one of the really important things that pushes me toward working for this, because it would have such a big impact on our society as a whole, not just on people's health.
Well, you've said that single payer is not just about health care. Tell me more about that.
Well, that's what I was referring to. It's about having a healthy population, a population in which everyone can live and work and learn to their maximum ability. A sick child doesn't learn well, and his whole life then is going to be impacted by that. That's a drain on the general good. We lose the talents of that person. The same thing happens when we have anyone who is not able to live a full life because of health problems that are untreated. Taking care of that makes them a productive member of society, often able to work, etc. And so the ramifications are just ripples in a pool through the entire society. And the issue of treating the mentally ill and those who are addicted and keeping them from being homeless and just real dysfunctional would have such a big, big impact.
But don't we have the best system in the world?
You know, we think we do, and in many ways we do. We can do wonderful, wonderful, innovative procedures. Very complex care can be given to some people who can pay for it. But many people don't receive the really basic kinds of care that are available in almost any other industrialized country in the world. They don't receive it because they can't pay for it, because they cannot afford insurance, and so they can't self-pay, and they have to do without and suffer as a consequence. So we don't do the basics for our people, and as a result, we end up with population health outcomes that are really a disgrace for a wealthy nation. We don't live as long as most other countries, several years less than the average for industrialized nations. More of our babies die as infants. More of our mothers die in childbirth than is common in other countries. And deaths that could be avoided but because of preventable illnesses are not treated are much higher here than in other places.
I understand that we rank 28th in life expectancy, and that's below a number of countries like Czechoslovakia and I think even Slovenia.
So. Yes, it's just quite ridiculous and unnecessary. The other thing we could say about life expectancy is that it varies greatly within our own country. Some of us who live in affluent areas and have been blessed with so many things in our lives live much longer than the poor in this country. And that's an injustice, too, that is very distressing to me. the life expectancy in different parts of Los Angeles and San Francisco are very different based on the income of the people, really, and how much access to health care they can get. And that's kind of telling. That's about why we don't have the best system in the world. We don't give the same thing to everybody. You have to be able to pay for it to get the best.
Wasn't the Affordable Care Act supposed to address all these problems?
It was, and it certainly did a lot of good. 20 million more people were covered across the country, and there were lots of things like covering pre-existing conditions, et cetera, that were very, very popular and did a great deal of good for many, many people. But then, on the other hand, nearly 30 million people remained uninsured when the Affordable Care Act was fully implemented. And now we're faced with the threat of even escalating that number, perhaps up to around 50 million, because of the changes that are being contemplated in Washington that will undercut much of the good that was done by the Affordable Care Act. But the Affordable Care Act never did get to providing universal coverage for everyone, to include all. It just didn't happen. Couldn't have happened under the way it was constructed. The big problem with the Affordable Care Act was that it left the insurance industry in place, and we continue to have the waste and inefficiency that goes with having thousands and thousands of insurance plans that are highly duplicative and of having them purchased at a price that is unaffordable to many people, so they are left without.
Aren't we supposed to help pay the CEOs their $20 million plus annual salaries?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just saw a statistic very recently. I think it was 100 CEOs in insurance industries, well, not CEOs, but executives, that have salaries of more than $100 million. A year, compensation packages of more than $100 million, and also that the insurance industry has had $27 billion in profits since 2011.
That's with a B, correct? Billion?
Yeah. That's with a B, yes, indeed. So the money that we pay in premiums does not pay just for health care. It pays for exorbitant salaries for a few. It pays for all sorts of administrative costs that really are wasted. The marketing, the bureaucratic efforts to avoid paying for care, being sure that people don't get everything they need, basically. All of that's very costly, and we're paying for that in addition to paying for health care. Much waste and inefficiency, and we need to not do that. We need to spend all of our health care dollars on paying for health care and getting people healthy.
What's the difference between single-payer and Medicare?
Medicare is single-payer, but it is for just a segment of our population. However, the federal Medicare plan is not exactly what we were proposing for California. We are proposing a plan that would provide greater coverage than the federal Medicare plan provides for our senior citizens right now. More comprehensive benefits, and we think that based on the study that was just released recently, individuals and businesses will pay less to achieve that kind of coverage.
Why can't we continue to have the ACA and a public option?
Well, the ACA is based on the current insurance industry model that has gotten us into this mess. So to retain it does not provide us with the kind of savings that we need in order to pay to cover everyone. So it's just the basic problem with our health system in terms of financing is that we have the insurance industry right in the middle, sucking up resources that could be used to provide health care to people who do not have it. And we have to eliminate that. We can't allow them to continue sucking those resources out of the system. They add no value. They are just a middleman that passes through our hard-earned premium dollars and pays part of them to providers and spends the rest on their particular industry and their profits and their bureaucratic structure, and that's a waste that we need to get rid of. So to keep the ACA and add a public option would simply not get us to the same place, and it would not provide universal coverage. So it's not an adequate substitute.
We're going to talk about what's going to happen in California, but first we have to take a break. You're listening to Through the Eyes of Women, and I'm Corinne Fragoni. I'm speaking with Pat Snyder, who lives in Contra Costa County, and we're talking about the potential to establish a single-payer health care system for California. What is going on in California? Let's focus on this grand state, the sixth largest economy in the world.
What's going on in California is that there is a bill in currently in the Senate called SB 562 that would establish a single-payer system to cover all California residents. The bill is a single-payer bill, and it has gone through a couple of committees in the Senate and is awaiting a vote on the Senate floor and will then go to the Assembly. So we're hoping to pass this through our assembly and get a signature from the governor and to institute this plan for the good of all of California. It won't happen immediately. There will be a period of time when the system will be implemented and put together, and there will be a certification when the resources have been obtained to fund the program adequately, and then it will begin. But we know that it will provide comprehensive benefits to everyone, and it will be funded in a way that everyone can afford, because instead of being premiums set at a price, it will be taxes that are based on people's income or spending, et cetera, not on just a price for premiums. It will also include no deductibles, copays, that kind of thing, the out-of-pocket costs that are just so difficult for so many people, especially those who are underinsured with high deductible plans.
Who supports Senate Bill 562?
A lot of people do. There was a recent poll that demonstrated that 70% of Californians support the principles that underlie it. In addition, there is a coalition of more than 150 organizations. Actually, it's a coalition of coalitions. There are four different ones that are working for single payer, that are pushing through this campaign to get this bill passed. Overall, we're called the Healthy California Campaign, but the members are the Campaign for Healthy California, which is a labor coalition, the All Care Alliance, which is led by nonprofit organizations that are focused solely on single-payer health care reform, has 166 endorsing organizations. There is a 40-member labor coalition in L.A., and then there is a new business coalition for single-payer that is forming and growing rapidly. So there are just many, many people in California, not just that support it, but are working very actively to get the bill passed and put on the governor's desk and then move on to implementation.
There have been recent articles in the newspapers talking about how this bill will cost $400 billion, which is more than our state budget. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I can. To compare what we spend on health care to the state budget is not a valid comparison. We spend right now $368 billion on health care, which is more than the state budget. So when they say $400 for single payer, that doesn't mean starting at zero. That's really only a very minor percentage more than we are spending right now in order to cover everyone who is not covered in California. And that's about just about 3 million people. So that comparison to the state budget really doesn't adequately explain what's going on. We're spending billions, $368 billion with a B right now. And additionally, 70% of that is tax dollars, federal and state, right now. So in effect, we really have a government-financed healthcare system, but we're not getting our money's worth because it's highly fragmented. There is enormous amounts of waste that can be eliminated. and eliminating that waste and saving money on things like outrageous drug costs and costs for equipment and services, et cetera, will help us to fund the program. The study by Robert Paulin that just came out demonstrated that we can save over our current system with a single-payer system and use those monies that we're saving and to provide care for the people who right now we're not caring for.
So you're saying of the $368 billion that's already being spent, 70% is already paid for by our taxes through such programs, I assume, as Medicare, Medi-Cal, CHIP.
All of those, but in the state, there is also things like all of the health benefits for public employees at every level.
So we're subsidizing their health benefits, too.
Sure. Taxpayers pay for those health benefits. There's also a lot of money spent in counties caring for people in desperate straits, for the uninsured in counties. That's also tax dollars that is part of that 70%. There's just myriad different pots of money that are part of that. And there is inefficiency in that as well. We would be much better served to put all of the funds into one pot, which covers one enormous risk pool, the 39 million people of California, and then to pay for that care of everyone equitably, same care, and paid for at the same price in terms of rates and purchase price of supplies and drugs, et cetera, et cetera.
I think what you're saying is it also will be much more transparent when we pay through whatever fund we pay for, either through payroll taxes or sales taxes or gross receipts taxes, we will know where that money goes. It goes into this one trust fund, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. And you're absolutely right, Corinne. Public accountability is a big, big, important part of all of this. Right now, the insurance industries have no public accountability. They don't have to report to us much about what they do or why they do it. But under this governing structure for this program, there would be total public accountability, including public meetings of board and a public advisory board that would be assisting the governing board. So we would be able to know what they're doing, why they're doing it, and when they're doing it, and with our money, and how the money is collected, and how much money is collected. And yes, totally transparent and total public accountability, which we lack now. That would be a big step forward, too.
I want you to look at your tea leaves and say, how is something like SB 562 going to interface with the federal government?
Yes. Tea leaves are a good way to describe it because there are many unknowns. The state would be authorized by the bill to negotiate with the federal government to direct all of the federal funds to which citizens of California are entitled, meaning Medicare, Medicaid, et cetera, into the trust fund that would be established in the state government. And so that process, you know, it's not exactly clear how it would all work out. We're confident that we will be able to complete those negotiations successfully because there is such a push to move things to the state level. And we're just going to be real happy to take over and run this here in one of the biggest states in the country. So that's should be, very welcome at the federal level. But exactly how it would play out is a little hard to say.
We don't have a whole lot of time left, but I certainly hear a lot of questions about single payer and a lot of myths and misunderstandings. One of them is, what do you, Pat, say to people who already have pretty decent health insurance? Will they lose their benefits?
Actually, I think they'll probably, in almost all cases, have more benefits because the benefits are so comprehensive under the single-payer plan we're proposing for California. And additionally, they're based on the research study just completed, for almost everyone, costs will be less. And the out-of-pocket costs that can be so troublesome and burdensome for so many people will go away. So I recognize that it is scary to think about losing something that you're satisfied with, and worries about health coverage are really, that's big stuff. But I think I can say with great confidence that everybody's going to be better off than they are right now because of the structure of the program.
Well, I'm healthy. Why should I pay for someone with greater health needs?
Well, someday you're going to be sick too, Corinne. I hate to tell you.
Oh, you're looking at your tea leaves again.
Yeah, right. And somebody's going to have to help pay for you. So, additionally, there's the whole issue of public health. A healthy population is a much more productive population, and that's good for everybody. It's good for the economy. Students are better learners when they're healthy. And, you know, to eliminate the anxiety that so many people have about keeping their coverage, to have something that you knew wouldn't go away is a very great benefit. So, yes, actually paying for others is the nature of insurance. That's what your fire insurance on your house is all about. Your house is probably not going to burn down, but you pay in fire insurance, and that pays for to help other people whose houses do burn down. Same with health insurance. We pay to help those who need it, but with health, you are almost certain at some point in your life to need help from others as well.
And if we're lucky, we'll get older. I'm glad you mentioned fire insurance, because I thought a good analogy that I've heard is that if the fire department or the police department operated under the same principles that we have currently under our healthcare system, if our house went up in flames, unfortunately, the fire department would have to arrive and then have us sign a whole lot of contracts and informed consent. And then they'd have to look at what premiums we paid, and we'd have to pay a copay, see if we met our deductible. And then maybe only our insurance covered our living room, so they could only put out the fire in the living room. That's not how I see healthcare either. I don't think that works very well for the majority of us. And I think it's a very good analogy.
It is. It is. And to put it that way, just points out graphically how ridiculous what we do now is in terms of getting things done well.
Another myth is that Canada has a single-payer system, as many people know. And we heard that physicians leave Canada to try to work in the United States. And also, there are long waiting lines in Canada. What are we going to do about that?
I don't know anything about physicians coming from Canada to work. I'm sure there are some. But I also know stories of physicians going to Canada to work so that they can give the kind of care they want to give to their patients. But this I will say about the waiting list. The system in Canada does not spend near as much money as we do. Spending what we do, we would not have to have waiting lists. And the waiting lists in Canada are not the same everywhere. Different states, provinces have different levels of funding and different systems. Additionally, I think that many of those problems have been reduced greatly in recent years. I think there's a lot of exaggeration and a lot of myth in what we hear about Canada, and I don't think they deserve as much bad mouthing as some tend to give them in terms of that.
Thank you very much, Pat. You've certainly been very informative, and I'm very glad that you're supporting and working for single payer.
Thank you. It's a passion for me. I'm delighted to do it. I know that it'll be a good thing for many, many people.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Corinne Fregoni. My guest today was Pat Snyder, a nurse who is very knowledgeable about healthcare reform in California, specifically single payer. If you're interested in learning more about single payer, there are lots of resources on the web. You can start with healthcareforall.org. Through the Eyes of Women is a collaborative effort produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer and editor, Katie Whiteside. You can listen to this show again, or to post listener comments, visit our blog at khsuwomen.com. Join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.